What do you do when you're blue? Have that feeling? You ever just kind of get down? Those feelings like, I just wish everybody would go away. Leave me alone. I don't want anybody around. I would just like to go and sit and not be bothered. Sometimes those feelings are very indefinable. There's no particular reason for them. You just can't explain it. You're just a flat line. That's all. A flat line. And that's all you want to be, is a flat line. And don't bother me. Other times, though, that blah feeling, that down feeling has a reason. Maybe even an obvious reason. Perhaps there's a physical reason. Maybe there's an ongoing physical problem. Low-grade sort of thing, a dull ache, a pain, something you have to live with. Something that isn't going to go away. Or maybe it's something that's rather specific. About 7 or 8 years ago, my doctor called me up one day to inform me that I was going to have surgery. For the second time, my thyroid decided to grow things. And these things could be malignant, he told me. And so you have to have the surgery. So now I don't have a thyroid, so every day I have to take some little pills, a blue one, a yellow one. And if you don't take your thyroid, you see, that's what controls your metabolism. That's what turns your food into energy. And if you don't take your thyroid, you don't have any energy. And about 3 months ago, I was starting to run out, and so I asked Lena if she would, and when she was out running some errands, pick up some thyroid for me. She's done it for years, and if I don't keep it right on the sink in front of me in the morning, I just forget about it. I don't take it. And I just started to feel blah. And suddenly we realized that she had taken the thyroid to remind her to pick it up for me, but hadn't yet been able to pick it up. And just a few days, and I'm headed down. I think probably many of us live with chronic physical reasons to feel blah. But there are others. Perhaps there are personal reasons. Maybe you and one of your children are living in a period of warfare, intense, demanding warfare, constant run-ins, and the family atmosphere is very stressed. And perhaps even as you sit here this morning, you realize that that last conversation, whether last night or Friday night or even this morning on the way to church, you blew it. You blew up. And now you're blue. Or maybe one of your semi-adult children or an adult son or daughter is going through one of life's learning experiences, you know? One of those moments when you said, look, if you will just listen to me, if you will listen to me and hear what I'm saying, if you don't do this, if you do this, you'll avoid that and you'll accomplish that. Did the child listen? No. And now what's going on? You see the pain. You see the hurt. And you step back and you think to yourself, what did I do? Couldn't I have helped avoid that somehow? I think I failed as a parent. Maybe you and your mate are in tension. Or maybe it's just schedule. Many of us have never learned how to say no. You're overextended, doing too much. Maybe we've learned how to say no, but the boss hasn't. There's just too much demand, too many balls in the air, too many lucky catches, too many sudden dives. Not enough energy to make it. Perhaps there are financial reasons. Maybe you're one of those new statistics we saw in the paper on Friday. The sudden surge in unemployment. Or maybe your banker has said no again. Or perhaps there are spiritual reasons. We have very real tendencies to pursue things that we know in our heart God doesn't want us to do, but there's a deliberateness about it. We're not willing to give up the independence. We want to do what God doesn't want us to do. We're not willing to step back and say yes to God. We want to say no. But that low-grade depression begins to grip us. And we know why. But we won't give it up. Well, perhaps there's some guilt from the past. Sin of the past gets a grip on the present. And now you struggle. Now you struggle. What do you do when you're blue? What's the answer? The answer is this. Come to the Word and worship God. Come to the Word and worship God. Carve out that time. Take a block of time out of your schedule. That block of time you can't possibly give up. That block of time that is just so precious to you, you don't have time to do it. You're committed and you cannot possibly pull it off. The longer you go, the worse it will get. Sometimes, probably it's not a good analogy, but sometimes as a Sunday school teacher or Bible teacher, I kind of feel like that parent, you know, who said the way I feel when I tell one of my sons, look, if you just please listen to me, please listen to me, don't do this, and he goes and does it. Sometimes I feel that way when I'm teaching the Bible because I hope that you will listen to what I'm saying and carve out that time. One of my biggest fears is that some of us, even as Christians, may have gone through that process and resisted carving out that time, and now we're past the point where we even sense the absence of God in our lives. Isn't that tragic? Isn't that tragic? Some of us can get past the point where we really are aware of the presence of God in our lives. And once again, I worry more about men than I do about women in an area like this. Women are fully capable of getting past the presence of God and not feeling that need anymore. But some of us as men have never gotten to the presence of God. It's not that we're past it, we're not up to it. But I will tell you that there is only one resolution. It is to come to the Word and worship God and find a kind of joy in the midst of whether it's the physical thing or the personal thing or the financial thing. Find a kind of joy that you never knew existed before because you come to the Word and worship God. For these two Sundays, I want to take a little mini-series on what do you do when you're blue. I want to teach you four words, four vital words that will help you be able to deal with what do you do when you're blue. The first word is honesty. Honesty. The second word is sovereignty. Sovereignty. The third word is humility. Humility. And the fourth word breaks the string. It's joy. Honesty, sovereignty, humility, joy. You see, when you come to the Word, you need to come to the Word with the honesty of your soul to say to God what you're feeling. When you come to the Word with that honesty, the thing that you will discover inevitably is the sovereignty of God that's involved in the process. And then comes the great issue. You've been honest with God. He's demonstrated that He is sovereign. Will you then take the step of humility to subject yourself to the sovereignty of God? I would say to you that this is the issue of health and life. The issue of health and life is learning to respond to, submit to, and react to, in the good sense of that word, the sovereignty of God. The sovereignty of God is the greatest comfort, the greatest motivator, the greatest leverage that we have, the greatest source of confidence there is, and therefore the greatest producer of joy that we can have in life. Honesty. God, this is what I feel. Sovereignty, God, this is who you are. Humility, God, this is who I am. Joy, thank you, God, for who I am. I want us to see a model this morning from the life of David. I'd like you to turn with me, please, to Psalm 5. As we come to Psalm 5, we see two things. David is blue. Am I blue? Color me blue. These are but pale echoes of David. David is blue. David is discouraged. And the reason why he is because he's under attack. David is making the headlines. For those of us who live here in Dallas, we are not always familiar with what's going on over in Fort Worth, but a member of the board of Dallas Seminary, Bill Garrison, is a city councilman in Fort Worth. And about 2 years ago when he ran for office, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram decided that they wanted to take Garrison down. They didn't ask him any real questions. They had some general information. Garrison, it turned out, had been involved in negotiating something for at the Alliance Airport involved with the Perot situation. And in the process, he'd made a profit in the title company as a lawyer that he owned. Fort Worth Star-Telegram told that part of the story. They didn't tell the part of the story that when Garrison was involved early on in a blind situation, did not know who the buyer was simply representing some of the principals involved. When he found out that he had a conflict of interest, he paid the money back. But the Fort Worth Star-Telegram never told that story until after the pressure was put on them. Now, I know that we can be media bashers as Christians, and I really feel that I need to have some balance because, you know, sometimes they catch us doing things that they ought to catch us doing. In this case, they didn't. In other cases, they have. But at any rate, it's sort of like David's made the headlines of his day. And there are false things being said about him. And we get the clue to this reality that David is under attack, harshly so, in verses 6 and 9. He refers to those who speak falsehood, who are men of bloodshed and deceit. And in verse 9, he describes them as not being reliable in what they say. The inward part is destruction. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. And here is the beauty of it all. The beauty of it all is that you have a situation in which apparently they are saying flattering things about David on the one hand and destructive things about David on the other hand. Very clever move. I remember a fellow who was in my church out in California when I pastored, who was a career man in the Navy. He was, at that point in time, a commander. He'd been in Polaris, Poseidon submarines, and he was an expert on ordnance. He had a master's degree in physics, an Annapolis grad with an MBA that he had earned from Southern California, even in the process of serving in the military in an extension program up in the San Francisco Peninsula. And he had nothing but top ratings all the way through until he met a captain, the captain that was over him when he was stationed as the interface with Lockheed. And he came to me one day in real depression and pain, because what he said, in effect, was, "My career in the Navy is over. I'm right at the window where it's time for me to make captain. I have 2 years. My last fitness report, evaluation. In this last fitness report, the captain said only good things about me. but in such a way as to completely blackball me. You know, he does excellent work, except, and there's just a little bit of a clue. And he knew the Navy structure. He had seen those fitness reports. He saw what happened to people like that. And he felt that the whole thing grew out of a conflict between him and his superior officer of a temperament nature and not quality of work. That's what David is getting. People around him who are attacking him, destroying him, undermining him. Have you been through that? Have you had people say things about you that are not true? Have you had people say things about you in an undermining and attacking way? Jealous people, petty people, but who are so sweet about it. What concerns me more than anything else is that I have done that to other people. So in Psalm 5, at verse 1, David comes with great honesty. In fact, the theme of these first few verses, of these first three verses, is this: because I am hurting, I call on you. Because I am hurting, I call on you. Listen to this. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. Heed the sound of my cry for help, my King and my God. For to you do I pray. In the morning, O Lord, you will hear my voice. Let me make it clear, Lord, you're going to hear me in the morning. In the morning, I'm going to order my prayer to you and eagerly watch. And what we have in this man's expression, as he goes not only in this segment, but further on in the psalm, we are going to see that what David is doing is pouring out the honesty of his feelings. David holds nothing back. David doesn't play games. David doesn't try to sort of move up to God in a real polite fashion, you know, using language that we don't understand these days. David's very upfront about what he feels. You see it in other men in the Bible when they're hurting. Remember when Moses in the Old Testament was angry with God, and he said to him, why have you stuck me with these people? I didn't create them. Why do I have all these headaches? That's the effect of what he was saying. He was plain old furious with God, and he poured it out. Remember Jonah? Jonah, at the end of his book, when God had obviously planned to deliver Nineveh, Jonah said to him, I knew you were going to do that. I knew that's what you were going to do. That's why I went away. That's why I didn't come here in the first place. You see, the biblical model, Moses, David, Jonah, we can look at Jeremiah, who cries out to God, who wants a wife, but God has denied him marriage. You can see this over and over and over again. That the first step in coming to God in moments of depression, in moments when you're down, in moments when you're hurting, is to pour out what you feel to God. Don't hide it. Don't pretend it's not there. Now, it's very important for you to be honest with God for this reason. It will help you really get honest with yourself. When I get down, one of the things I do is journal. I don't usually journal any other time. I'm not much into a journaling person. I sometimes write out prayers, but that's not something I do a lot, except when I'm really down. But when I'm down, I journal. Let me tell you one of the effects. I didn't plan to do it this way. It's one of the effects that it has on me when I'm down. I have this book that is, no one else knows where it is. In fact, I'm not sure I know where it is right now, but I'll find it one of these days. And what I do is I just write it all out. I sit down there in the morning and I read a little bit in the Word, and I just start writing. Get it all down. Page, another page. Big writing. Fast writing. Maybe furious writing. And then you know what I do? Put the cap on my pen and read it. Usually that breaks me. I can't believe I wrote this garbage. This is awful stuff. This stinks. I stink. It doesn't take more than a couple of times of that usually, and I close that book up and shove it away and keep it hidden. Getting honest with God helps you get honest with yourself. That's where you need to begin when you're blue. David comes to God and he says, "Because I am hurting, I call on you. Because I am hurting, I call on you." We see this description in these opening verses. I am hurting. And David expresses his emotion in a kind of a progressive way as he starts with groaning. He says, "Give ear to my words, O Lord." And then he restates it, "Consider my groaning." And there's an interesting progression. Groaning in verse 1, cry in verse 2, and then prayer at the end of verse 2, which he then develops. Groaning, cry, prayer. It's almost like he's waking up, and it's those inner feelings. You know, when you're down, the first thing that happens to you when you wake up is just for a moment you ask yourself, where am I? What day of the week is this? You have that feeling? I have that feeling. I wake up, and I know I'm awake, but where am I? What day of the week is it? I have to run through. What is it? Oh, it's Sunday morning, and I've got to teach my class. But when David wakes up, there is that dull, inarticulate ache in his soul. And that's what he means by groaning. It's the soundless feel of deep, almost silent pain within. I'm groaning. And then, once you're aware of that feeling and you begin to wake up, a flood of other things comes crashing in. Maybe it's the words that you heard just yesterday. Maybe last night you went to sleep with those words seared in your soul, and now you're waking up, and all of a sudden the echo of those words is beginning to fill your mind as you start to hear what was said again. And there is a cry against it, a cry of anger, a cry of despair, a cry for help. There's just a feeling that emerges from you, and there's a cry within you as you begin to focus on, and these feelings start to become articulate within you. And then David moves in his progress to become very specific. The pain in his heart causes him to turn to God. But in coming to God, I think there's something very important, and I want you to look at verse 2 with me again. "Heed the sound of my cry. Hear me. Pay attention to me. I'm crying for help, my King and my God." You know what that is? My King. The ruler over me. My God. Not just the ordinary word. We don't really know what the word God means, but the way David uses it, the particular word, there are multiple words for God in David's language, and the particular word that he uses is a word that speaks of power, strength, might. It's the creative word of God. It was God who created the universe and brought it into being. And he is appealing to that great, powerful being, and he says, "Hear my words, my Lord, the ruler of my life and the power of my life." And what does that mean? Ruler and power means sovereign. And David focuses at the place of the sovereignty of God. And he says, "Hear me. But I understand who I am. I'm being honest with you. I'm hurting. I've got people who are attacking me. But I want you to hear me because you are the only place I have to go for resource." And this is where we begin to make progress in the area of our deep hurt and despair and depression. When we realize the sovereignty of God. Now let me help you to understand the sovereignty of God, because many religions are committed to the sovereignty of God. But we're not talking about a religion. We are talking about a relationship. And the sovereignty of God for us does not grow out of some sort of long-distance, impersonal, non-caring master. The sovereignty of God for us grows out of an up-close, warm, loving King and personal ruler. Nothing comes into our lives that God somehow is not involved in the process of loving us. Some things are allowed, some things are caused, some things we bring. We're not able to put all of this together. We don't know how to handle this. There's no way we can resolve the issue of what is allowed, what is brought, and what do we bring. We can figure out what we bring, some of the time at least. But the simple fact of the matter is that there is a sovereign commitment from God that begins with creation and includes the sacrifice of His own Son for our sake that tells us that there is a personal involvement here. And some of the things that I mentioned whether it be the loss of a job, or the turn down for a loan, or an injustice in your life, whether it be that those who do evil to us take advantage of us and go off and prosper, there is the presence of the loving God who cares about what is happening within us. And so David declares in verse 3 that in the morning, the first thing I'm going to do in my day, O Lord, is to make certain, and I want you to understand, you're going to hear my voice. You will hear me. I am going to order myself before you. I'm going to bring myself to you, and I'm going to eagerly watch to find your presence. So David says, because I am hurting, I will call on you. But David goes on to say in verses 4 through 7, because you are a good God, I come to you. In verses 4, 5, and 6, he uses a picture to describe the goodness of God, and he cries out for justice. He says, you are a good God, I want you to bring justice. That's what he's calling for. He feels as if he's being treated unjustly, and he wants justice, and he calls out for this justice. For he says, you're not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. I hope you understand this. One thing about David in this passage is that he does understand who God is and what God is like, and a lot of us don't. We have a picture and an image of God as someone who delights in creating pain. We might not ever put it quite that graphically. We might not ever quite say it that way, but that's how we respond to life. Often we ask ourselves, what did I do to deserve this? And often the answer is nothing. No one deserves to die in a suffering, harmful, really rather hideous way. No one deserves, no matter what we've done in life, no one deserves to have his body totally decimated and to have periods of pain. And what is so confusing is when good people suffer. David's got one thing that's very clear. He does not blame God. He understands that God is good. He understands that sometimes in life we have confusion, we have uncertainty, but it is not because God is doing evil in our lives. For he says, you're not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. You do not enjoy bringing hurt and pain into people's lives. You do not enjoy seeing the wicked succeed. You do not enjoy seeing injustice happen on the face of the earth. There is no pleasure in this for you. And he understands the heart of God. He's a good God. And there's kind of a crescendo that builds up. You're not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. Evil doesn't dwell in you. And because of this, he moves to the next level. The kind of people who are opposing me, the boastful, shall not stand before your eyes. What a horrible indictment he makes right there. The boastful. The boastful. Talking with a businessman yesterday who observed that the people, that he put it this way, there is always someone around who is smarter than you are. And the people who don't know that are the people who end up in big-time trouble. If we become boastful in our spirits, if we become boastful in our hearts, if we think that we are successful because we have achieved it, because we have attained it, the next thing we will do is begin to look at other people and we will look down on them and we will begin to judge them and we will begin to criticize them and we will begin to make fun of them, we will begin to badmouth them. And what David says is, the boastful will not stand before you. Can you imagine? I think that's probably what was going on in David's life. That there were men standing around, looking at David and being boastful, comparing themselves to him and thinking how superior they were over him. But he was God's chosen man. I have been so guilty of this, I will never forget. There was one fight I had with a kid that I brought on. In fact, there were two of them. There was this one kid, it was a Roman Catholic kid in my neighborhood. His name was Joe Cellini. Kind of short and squat and had real curly hair. And he was dressed up in his white confirmation suit. Because that's how the kids in my neighborhood at least did it. And on that Sunday when he was confirmed in a Roman Catholic church, he's wearing his white suit. And I looked at him and I thought, ha, sissy little kid in a white suit. And I said a few things that expressed that opinion. I got to know Joe Cellini real well. On the ground. Boastful men and women don't stand before God. David goes on to say in verse 5, you hate all who do iniquity. You destroy those who speak falsehood. Boy, there's some powerful things here. There are some implications for business ethics and family management that are overwhelming in this passage. It disturbs me greatly when I hear at times reports about Christian people in the business world, Christian people who make promises. And then when the promises become a little more than they thought, they figure out how to get out of them. One thing I have learned is make few commitments, but keep the ones you make. Don't make a commitment unless you can keep it. And if it costs you more than you expected it to cost, pay the price. Because what David says is, otherwise you speak a lie. Now it's interesting that in his pattern, he starts with his pain, and in verses 4, 5, and 6, he's talking about those who are creating his pain. But he goes on to say in verse 7, I'm not going to be like them. I'm not going to focus on what they're like. I'm not going to become that kind of person. Instead of focusing on how I can get ahead, how I can become superior, how I can be boastful, how I can beat out others, here's what I'm going to do. I'm focusing on how I can worship God. Now, don't misunderstand me. David didn't spend all of his days prostrate before God, okay? You understand David. You know that he was the warrior king. You know that David was a magnificent leader. You know that he inspired men so that by saying simply, oh, how much I would love to have a drink of water from the well of Bethlehem, that something like three of his men took off in order to go to Bethlehem to the well and get a drink of water for David. The only problem is Bethlehem was held by his enemies, and if they'd been caught, they would have died. They risked their lives. You know anybody you'd risk your life for to get him a drink of water? I will tell you something. To be the kind of man or woman who earns the kind of respect and regard that will cause others to sacrifice in serving and helping, there's one thing you do. You don't try to be that kind of person. What you do is you do what David does. What does David say? He says, as for me, by your loving kindness, by your power, by your might, by your strength, I'm going to worship you and I will bow down in reverence before you. David says, there's one thing I'm going to do. Do you notice in his depression what he says? I'm going to worship. But he says more. Not only does he say, because I'm hurting, I call on you. Not only does he say, because you're a good God, I come to you. But he goes on to say, because you are a good God, I count on you. Verses 8 through 10. Oh, Lord, I don't want to be like my enemies. And Lord, I'm worried. I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I'm going to fall into the trap of hearing what they say, and I'm going to become angry, and I'm going to become like them. How am I going to do it? I will walk their way. I will speak back with harshness. I will react with bitterness. I will go out and defame them. I will sue them. I will get even with them. Oh, Lord, lead me in your righteousness because of my foes. Lord, in view of my enemies, in view of those who would destroy me, help me to have one focus and one focus only. Help me to focus on what is right. In fact, he goes on to say, make your way straight before me. You know what he means by that? He means this. Look, I don't want to get lost in the woods trying to find the right way. It's confusing. It's uncertain. I've got a righteous cause. I'm living in a lot of pain. Listen, Lord, open up your way before me. Cut it out. My haze is confusing. There's fog in front of my eyes. Clear away the fog. Help me to see. This is the right step. This is the right step. This is the right step. He doesn't say, show it to me. As far as I can see, I think what he's talking about is this. What you face when you're in, in a very difficult situation is it's one step at a time. I know this is right. I know this is right. I know this is right. Make it straight. Help me to see it. That's what he's asking for. And what he is saying is, I will count on you. There is nothing reliable, he says, in what they say. Their inward part is destruction. And then in verse 10, he says something that I think is a little bit confusing. You need perspective. Do you ever feel like you really want to get even with people? Boy, I'd love to show him up. Heard a story recently where a fellow was real good friends with one of his buddies, and was a high school football game, and they were in two different schools, and they were real good buddies, and this guy was a photographer in his school, and the other guy was a football player for the other school, and the photographer's school won. So he took a picture of the trophy being presented to his team while his friend was standing right there. And he sent it to him with a little note on it. Thought you'd love to have this. Rubbing it in a little bit, friend to friend. But we like to go further than that, don't we? And you say, look, what kind of an attitude is this on David's part? He wants them to be destroyed. Hold them guilty. Don't declare them just. Hold them guilty, O God. Let them fall by their own devices. Let them be tripped up by their own words. In the multitude of their transgressions, throw them out. Look at the end of the verse. For they are rebellious against you. He is not saying, God, get them for what they're doing to me. He is saying, Lord, deal with them because of their heart toward you. Sometimes people cross a line where they are not going to respond to God. At that point in time, there is a need for justice from the hand of God. And that's what David wants. Because I'm in pain, I come to you. I call on you. Because you're a good God, I come to you. Because you're a good God, I count on you. And finally, in verses 11 and 12, because you're a good God, I commit to you. Look what he says. But let all who take refuge in you be glad. Let them ever sing. Do you see this word here? You see this word, joy? I want you to understand that the heart and essence, the closest thing associated with times of depression in the Bible is joy. I'm going to show it to you. From David, Jesus, and Paul. That the greatest emotion associated with the feelings of depression in counterbalance are feelings of joy. Depression leads to joy. And what David says is, in the midst of my depression, here is the one thing I call for from you. That you will stand for me, that you will represent me, but that you will do your justice. And by the way, when David says he wants God's justice done, there's one thing that's very clear. If David is wrong, God will not answer this prayer. If David is wrong, God will not answer this prayer. But in the meantime, he says, let all who take refuge in you be glad. Let them ever sing for joy. We'll come back to that, Lord willing, next week. For he says in verse 12, it is you who bless the righteous man, O Lord. You surround him with favor as with a shield. See that word surround in verse 12? It's found only one other time in the Old Testament. You know where it's found? It's found in 1 Samuel 21:26. In 1 Samuel 21:26, David is surrounded by enemies. And he looks like he's going to be defeated, but God intervenes and delivers him. And the image is very significant. When you feel surrounded by life, if you will come to the Word, worship, find God's sovereignty, you will discover God's deliverance. He will protect you. So when you're blue, come to God's Word. Worship Him honestly. Find His sovereignty. And you will know His joy.